Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Awesome. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Hey, what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Well, tonight, this is probably in the top two or three, if not number one, most requested topics that we've ever had. And I know we've been asked in the last year many, many times to cover this. And it's the disappearance of Madeleine McCann.
Especially our UK fans have been asking for this and more UK stories. So we're trying to give them what they want. So what happened with Madeleine here?
Yeah, it's tricky because, well, I should preface this by stating that this is a very charged case and there are people who have chosen a side and they've stuck very hard and fast to that side. And just in doing my research, I noticed that there are some very biased websites out there. And that's to be expected. I think people have looked into it and made determinations based on the very convoluted witness statements and evidence that's available for the most part. So I could predict that when this episode goes up and our listeners start giving it a go, that we may have some who will vehemently disagree with our findings. And there will be others who will say, of course, I already knew this.
Yeah. Well, it's like Amanda Knox or Casey Anthony or any of these other highly charged cases. You can pick and choose what evidence you want to look at. And they, you know, depending on which way you cherry pick, you're going to find guilt or innocence. You're going to find suspicion or, you know, people in trouble. And this case is probably one of the worst when it comes to that, because I know when I came into this case, I thought these are just two parents that were on vacation and they were at their resort and they just assumed the resort is a safe place and everything's fine. And they are victims of a terrible crime. That was the mindset when I came into this case. We'll see where it goes by the end of the episode.
That's true. And I suppose I should state where I was starting from when I looked at this case over the years without looking into it very deeply, but just reading things here or there. I would suspect them of having some sort of hand in this based on the way they handled themselves. I just was suspicious the entire time. And there are other things that have popped up as well that I really don't want to state just yet because we'll get into those as we go on. But a few things added up to quite a bit, a heavy weight on this case that I could not ignore.
So essentially these parents, they go on vacation with their friends, right? It's not just them. There's a couple other couples and their children and they all go to Portugal to a resort.
There are actually 9 adults and 8 children.
Okay.
Those would include the McCanns. So the McCanns, yeah, and they had 7 friends. This, they're actually known as the Tapas 7 when it comes down to descriptions of this case. People might have heard that. These would include Jane Tanner, Russell O'Brien, Rachel and Matthew Oldfield, David and Fiona Payne. And many of these people are physicians. So these are doctors, and doctors are people we trust. So I think starting off, you have very credible people, I would say. Wouldn't you? When you just look at who these people are, their backgrounds, they seem well-educated, well-to-do, seem trustworthy.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot to lose.
The Paynes were with Fiona's mother. And so you have all these adults and you have all these kids. And what we learn early on is that they like to go and hang out at the resort's restaurant, essentially, in the evening after putting their kids down.
It's a restaurant bar that's poolside. And the pool is pretty much in between the restaurant and the building, you know, the one-story building with all the apartments. It's kind of like a resort hotel.
You can look these apartments up online. It's known as the Luge Ocean Club. Where they go and dine at in the evening and have drinks is about 50 meters as the crow flies.
Yeah, you'd have to go around the pool, through the gate, and then down a little path to get to the building. You can see the building plain as day from where they're sitting, but you can't really see into the apartments. So it's not that close, but it's still on the same property of the resort, which I know a lot of people, they go there, they put their kids down, and they go to this restaurant. People are like, why would you leave your kids where you cannot see them? Why would you leave your kids somewhere where they're unattended or unsupervised? And I understand that point of view completely. But at the same time, they're a stone throw away. And if you've been there and you've been doing this for several nights in a row, you probably start to feel safe. You probably think this is okay. I just look at, they felt safe, and that's why they left their kids in their room while they were at the bar or the restaurant.
Well, here's where I have my first issue, which is they feel comfortable leaving the children there at night and locking them up. So the apartment is locked front and back. But the trouble with it is that the night that she ends up going missing, they don't lock one of the doors. And they claim that they do that because they want their friends to be able to check on their children as well, even though every night, whoever would, because they would take turns leaving to go check on their children, they would check on their own children. And it really bothers me because they have a key. So you can lock a door. If you're going to send someone to check in on your kid, and they know that this is what they're supposed to do, or they've offered to do it.
Hand them the key, right?
Hand them the key. Is it really that difficult? Because I'm going to tell you right now, child abduction is not something that started in 2007.
No.
It didn't start in 1997. It's been going on probably since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
And there's no way that the McCanns can tell me that it's okay to not be in line of sight of your children and to leave the door between them and a possible abductor unlocked, when if you were being stalked, all they'd have to do is go by and check the door.
Yeah.
This is something that happens a lot. People will just go by and check a door, check a window. We covered a case before like this where there was a burglar, and he said if a place was unlocked, then that was carte blanche. He could just go in and take what he wanted. So you're going to convince me somehow that these parents are that naive that, oh, well, we'll leave it unlocked. It's fine. They don't live there. They're on vacation. So that makes it even worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And all I would argue is if you are leaving your kids, say, in a hotel room, which is locked typically, and you are going to the hotel, restaurant, or bar, you're not leaving the hotel. I don't really have a big problem with that. I'm okay with, you know, okay, so your kids are out of line of sight, but at least they're locked away somewhere where you know they're safe from others. You know, maybe they could swallow something and choke, or maybe they could get themselves into trouble in the room, but at least they're protected from the outside world. So I get they put their kids in the room, but leaving it unlocked, that it just seems weird.
And then supposedly they cycle. They'll have a person leave at a certain time, like say at 9:10 to go check on the kids, and another person at 9:25, whatever it is. And if that's really the case, then you would think that there would be a constant coming and going of people from the group. When why can't they just be mature about this and leave someone with the children to watch them? But you have this many adults. You have 9 adults. You're telling me that one or two of them can't stay behind and keep an eye on things? I mean, is it that important to go out and drink and eat every night and just, well, the kids are safe. We'll just, you know, cover our ears and close our eyes and sing la la la. Cultural or not, they're in a different place. This is high risk behavior.
If they were having a dinner date and one of the group brought their kids over to the other person's house and they put all the kids downstairs in the basement and then all the parents went upstairs and had a party and then, you know, checked on the kids in durations down in the basement in the house that they have control over, I get that. But they're in Portugal, they're in another country. And I would think that your spidey sense would be a little bit higher at that point, and you would try to be a little bit more protective. They claim they go to dinner at around 8:30, right?
The last people to arrive supposedly are Dr. David Payne, his wife Fiona, and then her mother.
And they arrive right before 9 o'clock.
Yeah, about, he says 8:55 p.m.
Okay.
And he says by that time, everyone else was already there.
And they've all left their children in their rooms, locked, except for the McCanns.
Yeah, like I said, McCanns left a door unlocked that one night.
And when do they go and check on the children? And who goes and checks?
That's a good question. And that's because what they decided to do to explain this is they took, Madeline had a sticker book. And so in the back, they had sort of a page they could write on. So they tore out a page and wrote on it. They wrote who went when. And they actually ended up writing it again. And when they're individually questioned, that doesn't seem to match up quite as well either. It's almost like they can't exactly remember down to the detail exactly when they went. And that's the funny thing is one of the friends says he goes over to check on the McCann's kids. And he glances, I suppose, towards Madeline's room, the one she's in. And he notices that it's a little lighter, as if the blinds are open a bit. But he doesn't even go in there. He doesn't go to check on her. So,
yeah, which is weird because he said he was going to check on the children, but then he doesn't.
It's this reeks of, I'm just going to say it, it reeks of a lie. Like that doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, I made it to the apartment. I really just want to go back and drink. So either he does not give a damn about the kids, or, well, I mean, which is entirely possible, or he's just a lousy person. Like he doesn't bother to even, once he's there, he just can't bring himself to go and do what he was there to do. There's this saying that's accompanied by humorous images all over the internet, and it says, you had one job.
Yeah.
If he had actually checked, they might have. And this is supposing that he's not part of something. If he had checked then and she was not there, they would have known even earlier. But as we'll talk about, the timelines with this case and even the timeline after the parents realize that she's not there anymore, the timeline is very suggestive that this isn't a simple matter of our kid's missing, let's get help. Or we were going to check on the kids, so we do. It's the timeline is not very helpful. I'll just say that. We could talk about everyone's statements one by one, and it doesn't really lead us anywhere. It just leads to confusion. For at least on my end, it seemed very much fabricated. I don't know how you felt about their description of their timelines and when and who went to check on the children and whose children they checked on.
Oh, initially they say McCann's check on the children at around 9:05, which,
and that's Jerry, you know, McCann, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, so here we go. It's like, okay, so they check on them just after their friends show up, and then they you know, it's this tight timeline. So essentially, they've literally been gone 35 minutes from the time he checks on them. That's just over half an hour. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. They say that they're checking on the kids. Is it his friend? Is it Jerry who's checking on him? They say at 9:15, their friend Jane Tanner sees a man with a child, walking with a child. And the child looks like it's wearing bright colored pajamas, almost like Madeline's. But they still haven't quite raised the alarm yet.
Yeah, it's really strange because she says she sees this person carrying a child and gives a very good description of this person. But right nearby is Jerry McCann. And he stopped to talk to somebody. So those two people, Jerry and this other person, Jess Wilkins, do not see this person carrying a child. They don't notice, even though it defies logic. Like, they should have seen this person. And the person, who we'll just go ahead and say it, has been identified many years later because of information that person gave. That person didn't come forward. They were tracked down. But they gave information, actually were able to show the clothing that the daughter had been wearing. They were able to match the description and give an account as to why they were there. Although what doesn't make sense is he said that he had collected his child from the night creche and was heading back. And, of course, Jane says that he was headed in a certain direction, but that direction would not – that direction conflicts with that man's story about where he was going.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, Jerry should have seen this person carrying the child as well, but didn't.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
So it's 10 o'clock before they freak out, essentially.
It seems to take quite a while before authorities are alerted to this, which is another suspicious thing that occurs with the case.
Yeah, but at 10 o'clock, they claim that them and their friends were searching for Madeline, and they were engaging at least the resort's employees and, you know, the people that work there, the staff. So they were hunting around searching for her because they initially assumed that she wandered off because, well, they left the door open.
Yeah, it just doesn't ring true for me.
Well, and also, Madeline wasn't alone, was she?
No, she had twin siblings. The siblings were younger than she was.
So Madeline's 3 years old, and then she has siblings that are younger than her. So obviously not good witnesses to what happened.
No.
And that's something else to consider is Madeline is 3 years old, and she has two younger siblings, and they left all three of these children alone in a hotel room. Hopefully, if they were just sleeping, everything's going to be fine, but it's kind of questionable. So at this point, we have an hour and a half, possibly, a window that they're saying that between the time they went to dinner to the time that they're alerting at least their friends and hotel staff. But really, when you look at it, it's a little over 30, 45 minutes. It's around 35, 40 minutes of where's the child, you know, that they don't know where their child is because they're gone. So that's really a short window. It's not quite as long as an hour and a half or 2 hours.
If you believe the father that he had visited his child and then left, and then later Kate discovers that the child's not there. Yeah, it could be 50 minutes, could be an hour. But either way you look at it, that's a short window.
There's multiple timelines depending on which statement of theirs you take. But regardless, the most is an hour and a half. That's the most, and it's probably less. Just keep that in mind because it's going to come into play later.
It should also be noted that this case is similar to the JonBenet Ramsey case in that at the very beginning, there is this idea that it's a kidnapping slash abduction. And it's because when, and I'll just say it, I think it's a class issue here. I think when you have very well-to-do people, upstanding citizens, so to speak, I think the authorities give them the benefit of the doubt. So when they say, we believe someone came and took her, they go with that. When that's actually, you're spoiling the case at the beginning right there, because they don't seal the place off as they should have. And you're supposed to be taking statements, people separated. And because they say, oh, someone took her, we'll have to look and we'll have to figure this out, they're not operating under the chance that the parents were involved. And I know that will probably ruffle some feathers, but it happens a lot. That in many cases, when someone's gone missing, it's someone they know. And it's because it's someone that has access to them, it has information. This comes up because, you know, Kate offers up the idea that, you know, she had let him know that their kids would be back in the room. That's almost like saying, hey, I know I don't know you people, but I'm going to let you know that our kids are not watched and they're actually back in the room.
Well, I can see them just telling them, hey, they're in the room just so the staff knows, but it's kind of to me,
why let them know though?
Yeah,
why?
Exactly.
They're asleep and they're left in the room. I mean, they're not watching them, so why let anyone else know they're there?
And if you look at this, is they have room service. Typically, room service comes sometime during the morning to refresh the room, and then they might have a turndown service around 5 or 6 o'clock, but they're not coming to the room after 8:30. So there's no real reason to inform the staff. And did they inform them every night or just that night?
Yeah, it's a good question. It takes them quite a long time to contact the authorities, and I believe it's actually a third party that contacts the authorities. So the police don't even show up until after 11 o'clock. I think it's about 11:10. And then they did a brief search, and of course, then they have to elevate this. And so they contact the criminal police. And each of these police departments respond within 10 minutes, they say. Within the time that they're alerted, it takes them within about 10 minutes to get to the resort.
Which is pretty quick response time.
I'd say it's pretty solid. But, you know, given that this is a resort area, I'm sure that it's strategically placed.
Yeah. The authorities show up. They're doing their investigation. How does this play out between the McCanns and the authorities here? How long before the authorities change their investigation from an abduction case to maybe it's the parents?
It takes about a month. So you could say if they did have a hand in this, that there was a month wasted.
And so there's lots of theories here. There, you know, they say that there's this person that was walking with the child. Another Irish family or some other family says they see a man with the child. And of course, if alarm bells are raised, anyone and everyone that knows about it or thinks they can be a witness, they're going to give a bunch of statements and a bunch of leads. And none of these leads really pan out at all. So the man escaping with a child, there's a few eyewitness accounts of this happening, but at the same time, it's kind of shots in the dark. It's not really nothing substantial at all.
Yeah, down there in Portugal, arguido means suspect. Mm-hmm. And so especially in that first month, they work on possible suspects, people that were seen in the area who seemed suspicious. They checked into cleaners. They checked into people who went door to door. And they amassed sort of a list of suspicious people, arguidos.
So if we believe the story here, the parents might have been somewhat neglectful, leaving their hotel room, leaving their children in their room unlocked, and somebody has come in and abducted their three-year-old. You know, I guess if it was a lone abductor, they could only carry Madeline. They wouldn't take the other two. But at the same time, I would assume that if you're going to take a kid and sell it on the black market, wouldn't you take all three? It's sort of weird that two were left.
This doesn't have to be someone who's taking the kid to sell it into sex slavery. It could be someone who was taking the child for their own wants or needs.
Yeah. There could be, you know, I mean, a three-year-old is, to me, that's, you could take it for yourself or you're taking it to resell this child and make money. I don't think that the McCanns were financially strapped, so I don't see them selling their child, or, you know, if they were, they would be selling off all three. But being that they're at this resort, I don't see them paying, you know, somebody to come abduct their child. And if somebody's coming to abduct their one child, it's just kind of odd that they happened upon this one hotel room to find this one child. I understand that child abductions have been happening since the dawn of time, but at the same time, stranger danger is a much hyped thing, and I just don't see the planets aligned at this point to where an abductor has an opportunity to do this. It just, there's too many coincidences to line up.
Well, no, they could be
stalking
yeah. them, and it should be said that one of the twins is a girl. But I think the other factor here is the age. A three-year-old requires a lot less minute-to-minute care than, say, a one-year-old.
Yeah, an infant.
It's just, it would be much more difficult. It requires a lot more work. But yeah, this, to me, it seems feasible that someone could have been watching and waiting and took the opportunity. But yeah, I think that what's more convincing here isn't what's possible, but what we know. And what we know is what these people said when they were actually questioned by investigators and what they said they did, when they tried to match statements together to see if everyone had the same story. And as you go through this case, it just seems as though people are ready to say things that would divert attention from the parents, but they don't seem to have a lot of information when it comes down to it.
Yeah. And the authorities are taking their word for it. The authorities are listening to their statement and going with that as their lead. And so this isn't a child abduction, so they're investigating it as such. I guess they were working with a man named Robert Malott, who is like a translator who is helping them. And Robert made some disparaging comments like, oh, I have a child, a little daughter, just like Madeline, you know, and they're the same age and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, they kind of was like, well, this guy's sort of suspicious. So then the cops investigated him and, you know, well, he must have taken her because of all of his interest in Maddie. Again, it's that all the focus was away from the parents.
And what's interesting is when they focus on these other people, they come up empty handed, even though, you know, they searched Marat's room where he was staying with his mother, correct?
Yeah.
And they search and they don't find anything.
No.
Now, I know you could say, well, they've searched and not found anything with the McCanns, but actually that's not true.
Yeah. They'd found some partial evidence there, but it was, I don't know. There was a lot of things that were unavailable to them at the initial investigation because they weren't investigating the parents. So it wasn't until later that they started really getting in. And that was when the McCanns were investigating it themselves because they felt that the investigators or the police law enforcement weren't doing a good enough job finding their child, which we kind of saw a parallel in the JonBenet case and some other cases where they don't work with the investigators very closely because they say that they're not doing a good enough job. So they start doing their own investigation, which sort of can hamper the police investigation, right?
Well, they don't just do that, but they also question even being considered suspects, which you have to understand. If you're close to someone who goes missing or ends up dead, you have to be looked at. You can say whatever you want, but people lie all the time. And what's more important, your comfort level or getting to the truth? So if you say it's not us, you're looking in the wrong direction, you're actually raising suspicion. There is that question of class being well-to-do people. Perhaps maybe they would have skated by with that there here as well.
That's possible.
Which is unfortunate because I'm going to say it. I think if they were middle class or if they were poor people, they would not have had a month. They would have had about 30 seconds.
Yeah, they would have been taken to the station that night and been interrogated. I think you're completely justified in that statement, 100%.
This is trouble for an investigation because if you start off on the wrong foot, which may have happened with this one, then you're really starting from behind the eight ball.
What did they find, or do you want to jump right to the dogs?
We can approach everyone's witness statements, and we can go over missing bags. We can talk about who was seen in the area. But there's one thing we know for sure, and that's that dogs have one of the best senses of smell in the animal kingdom. And that's why they're used in law enforcement so much. They can track a person who went through an area after they'd already done it. They can track a person there, and the dog can actually follow where someone went. This has actually been used in a case. There was a case, a woman had been raped in a neighborhood, and someone went from that place back to where they were staying. And all along, that woman said over and over again, it was an older black gentleman. And it didn't end up being that because the dogs could track exactly where this person went back to the house where this young white kid was staying. So really all I'm trying to say is they use dogs in law enforcement, and it's because they can be trained to check for certain scents, and they can be given a scent and they can track it down. So they can be highly specialized animals.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/GenY. That's storyworth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
There's a Mythbusters episode where they take like drug dogs and put them to the test, and even tracking dogs. It's a wonderful episode to watch because you'll see a dog find drugs in an airtight container stuck in a bottle or stuck in a bucket of bleach and stuck in a warehouse randomly on a shelf. And that dog walks in the warehouse and goes right to that bucket. I've seen drug dogs find, you know, marijuana in gas tanks in a PVC pipe. And it's pretty incredible what they can do. People say they're unreliable, but really what you should say is the handler is unreliable. The dog is reliable, but if the handler tells the dog to alert, it can alert and give you a false positive because of the handler. But as far as that dog goes, I don't question the dog very often. I've seen some amazing things by these dogs. And the two dogs that are on this case are Eddie and Keela. And Eddie is a cadaver dog and Keela is a blood dog. And these dogs are actually brought in by the parents. They are the ones that got the investigation to go this far and bring the dogs in. And Eddie and Keela come in. They go through the entire resort, and it's not until they get to apartment 5A, you know, where the family was staying, that they start alerting to things. And you can actually see the video of these dogs doing this and alerting. The handler's nowhere near the dog. The handler is far back. He's not, you know, it's not like, you know, the Mexican border where, you know, the handler is like, go find it, you know, and trying to get the dog to alert. They're standing back and these two dogs are doing their thing and they're doing it one at a time. Eddie goes in first. He alerts behind the sofa and he alerts in the bedroom.
Isn't it by where the wardrobe is?
Yes. It's like in between the bed and the wardrobe. Keela goes in and alerts in the same exact places for blood. Then they go on to alert on kind of like the back patio area where some bushes are. And finally, they alert on the car that the parents were driving, the rental car. Now, I have a problem with this, Aaron. I mean, let's take the rental car out. All right, let's just take the car out. Let's just say it was the apartment only, just the room. The blood is in dispute because they did a DNA test on the blood. And they're like, well, partial DNA shows that it could be Maddie, might not be Maddie. There's a lot of argument over that. But the fact of the matter is blood and cadaver were detected in the room. I did a lot of research and all I could find was a body starts decomposing immediately, but before a cadaver dog can hit on it, it should be laying there for a period of time. Some people say up to 90 minutes before it's going to leave some kind of trace before the dog hits on it. Could be less, but it's up for debate. These dogs are hitting on this room, so we can pretty much say that there was something dead in that room. And that thing had to have been dead for a while, not 35 minutes, you know, or an hour and a half, because the parents were around their friends, so they were pretty much accounted for. So if somebody came in and killed Maddie in the room, did they leave her body in there to rub the scent around and then take off with the corpse? Why would they take off with a dead corpse? Also, there wasn't enough time to me for someone to come in there, kill, and then take off. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So it leads me to believe that if what those dogs were smelling was Maddie and not some other person, that some other dead body that happened to be in there, she had to have been killed before dinner and her body had to have been in there. I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense, right?
Well, to be fair, she could have also just died without having been killed.
True.
I want to state, since you brought it up, the vehicle was actually rented a while after she had gone missing. It's not before.
Yeah.
No, it's a Renault Scenic and mm-hmm. It had been rented 24 days after. Here's what's interesting is they take the vehicle and they take Robert Murat's vehicle and they park it amongst other vehicles in a public car park. It's an underground car park. And then they release Eddie. Eddie sniffs around the vehicle. You know, he's checking out the vehicles, and he goes over to the McCann's rented vehicle and hits upon something in the boot, in the trunk of the vehicle. So it's suspicious because why would the dog go there? And of course, the McCann's believe this is not good science. They think it's bunk. They don't believe in the dogs. Of course, as you state, the dogs seem like they would be perfectly unbiased. They don't have a dog in the race. They just check for the scent. There will be people out there that say, oh, well, they were trained to go to the McCann's vehicle.
No, I don't believe in that kind of a conspiracy.
There may be a conspiracy here. You and I like to say that we're not big on conspiracies, but if you look at this case from the side of the McCann's may have covered something up here, it seems logical that they didn't do it on their own. Especially if you listen to the statements given by their friends, say, listen to Dr. David Payne. If you listen to his statements with the idea that he knows something about the McCann parents, it starts to feel weird because he doesn't talk as though he's someone who knows what he's talking about. To me, it came off as he's sort of thinking and talking at the same time.
Yeah.
And again,
something off the cuff.
His statements don't really match those of Kate. And it's important because when these people are interacting over that day, what were they doing that day? It seems very strange that they can't really nail down what was going on. Yeah. And depending on who you ask, they were doing different things. So I guess what we're getting at here is that there's a good chance that this child didn't go missing between 9:15 and 10 o'clock.
Or 8:30 and whatever time, yeah. There's just no way.
There's a good chance that something happened to this child at any point before that day. I mean, it could have been the day earlier. Because we're going by the word of people who may have an interest in not telling the truth.
We're going by the word of the people that should be the prime suspects. And because this investigation was essentially botched from the beginning, we're having to go with their evidence, which has been a little contradictory, and it just doesn't add up with their statements don't add up with the evidence. And again, I came into this thinking they were completely innocent, and I didn't even fault them for leaving their kids in the room by themselves. This isn't something I was actually biased in the other direction when I started researching this, but I believe in the dogs. And I believe that as soon as the dogs hit on their car, to me, it's not case closed, but that just goes to show that there was something in that car. Where did this come from? Now, the parents have, to me, done a good job with searching for their child. They raised money to start a fund against, you know, to keep searching. They keep returning to the resort in Portugal to search for their daughter. This isn't like a situation like Casey Anthony where they're just like, oh, our kid's gone and we don't care. They have put forth an effort. I see an effort there. They're looking. But at the same time, all of a sudden, can you say, is it all for show? Is it all to kind of cover their tracks?
It can be. There was a woman who had gone missing, and her husband was very much a part of searching for her. And would weep on TV, and eventually, I believe it was his brothers, found out something, had a talk with him, and told him, hey, we know you did this, and you're going to have to come forward with it. So people who are involved can act as though they're concerned and can put on a show. Let's face it, if this was not a malicious crime, then their grief could very well be real. It could not just be a show. They just don't know what else to do.
Oh, and just to mention it, the dogs did hit on a lot of other items, possessions and clothing. So it wasn't just sofa, wardrobe, and car. It was a lot of stuff.
Right. But the important thing here is why would a dog hit upon their vehicle that was rented over 3 weeks later since the disappearance? Well, think about it. If they are involved in the disappearance of their daughters, body, we should say, because if the cadaver dog's picking up something, it's not a good sign. But no. if they're picking up something, if the dog's picking up something with the car, then think about it. They're in a strange place. They're on holiday. If they were home, they'd probably have a better idea about what to do. But since they're on holiday, they would have to hide the body, you know, first, and then they would have to come back and move it later and find a better permanent spot to place the body for it not to be found. But you can't get it all done within a day.
No. And again, if they're, you know, they go to dinner at 8:30 and then they're searching for their daughter at even 10 o'clock, well, the daughter's not in the room anymore because their friends and the hotel staff and the police are all there at that point searching between 10 and midnight. So she had to have been removed before dinner. She was already gone.
That's what I think too. I think it's clear that this wasn't something that happened between 9:15 and 10 o'clock.
They're doctors, they're physicians. You know, here's the ongoing theory is they sedated their children or at least their daughter. And so they could go out and drink so they could go enjoy their holiday. And maybe through arrogance or a mistake, they sedated her and they sedated her a little too much. And she didn't come back. And at that point, it was a terrible accident. And at that point, maybe the other friends might have either inadvertently or consciously been on board with let's make this, you know, let's cover this up. Let's make this something that it's not so you don't get in trouble because you're rich, you're high class. There's no reason to destroy your life over one simple mistake. That's sort of the overall theory, and that's the only one that makes sense to me because somebody coming in and killing their child and then running off with the body doesn't make any sense. Them selling their child doesn't make any sense. I mean, those are the other kind of ongoing theories. So here it is. I don't see any other version of this story that makes sense, especially they come back later, they move the body, dump it somewhere else with their car that they rented. Now their car's tainted. And sorry, dirty diapers and whatever explanations they gave for why that dog hit on the car do not make any sense. The dogs are trained to smell dead bodies. That's it. Not even dead animals, dead bodies.
Well, let's talk for a moment about why their friends may have covered for them. And they would have had to cover for them because a 3-year-old child who, as we say, may have been missing well before 9 o'clock that night or 10 o'clock that night, they would have recognized that she wasn't around.
Yeah.
Because they hung out together. You know, they supposedly went to the pool. Some of them were playing tennis. At some points during the holiday, they see the children. So if at some point their daughter ends up missing, I think that they would have been concerned about that. And the fact that that's not something that's raised before 10 o'clock, you know, that's when supposedly Kate discovers that her daughter's missing. You know, it just doesn't ring true. It doesn't ring true that something happened at that period of time when they say it did. And, I don't know. I would definitely, if anybody has any questions, you just have to think about the way that they say this all goes down, how long it takes for the police to be contacted. You know, just assuming that your child just walks off and you're on vacation, that as if the child's going to go and find you, it doesn't make any sense. It's not like they're down the street. They're in the resort. And as they like to say, they're very close by. I mean, where is the activity? The activity's right over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is just very strange that this is their explanation for what they were doing that night and who was going when, and then their friend, their doctor friend says, you know, oh no, I'll go check on Maddie. And he goes, but doesn't check on her. They're not mad at him. Oh yeah, we understand. You said you were going to do this, but you didn't. That's not a problem for them.
Yeah.
Cause I guarantee you, it doesn't matter how close you are to a person. You at least say what the hell? There never seems to be a question in their mind about their friend, this other doctor. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, because at that point, it's like, did he take her? Because he was the last person to check on her. But he's never a suspect. They never question him. Sort of an odd dilemma there.
Yeah, the McCanns are good at pointing out which suspects don't make any sense. So they're so sure. And I've used this line before, but it's as if they want to steer the investigation, which is never good.
Totally. Yeah, they're totally steering it. And it's we've seen it before, especially with the JonBenet case. It's a deflection. And I don't know how anyone will behave when they're accused of a murder or any terrible crime. And we've seen, you know, between Darlie Rotier, Casey Anthony, and others, and O.J. Simpson, how people behave. And everyone's different. Everyone does something different. And I can't say that the way somebody behaves dictates their guilt. But here, it's really showing that they're not working to, they're working to find their daughter on their own terms. And that's it. That's all they're going
to
do.
And that to me is suspicious because there's no real trust in the authorities here, where they have people that are trained to sort this stuff out. But they know better. They're going to say, oh, but this isn't something you should look at, or this person you shouldn't look at. That seems like a good suspect, but this one doesn't.
Mm-hmm. It's just weird. And I believe in the dogs, and I don't think those were false positives. I don't think those are transfers of anything. I think there's a good amount of circumstantial evidence there to want to show them as the prime suspects. Now, there were some other things that you were talking about as far as, like, items there. They had an item that, like, what was it, a golf bag or something?
Be a tennis bag, because some of the people in the group love to play tennis. And certainly they could play tennis at this resort.
So he left the bag there, or it disappeared?
No, it's photographed in their apartment, but they don't seem to take ownership of it because it disappears. They don't say, yeah, we had this tennis bag and now it's gone. We wish we knew what happened to it. They don't even say that. They say basically that they don't know, like, what they don't know that they had. Their friends say they don't remember seeing a bag like that. But it's photographed. You can see photographs of this bag. You know, if you read up on this, there's either a missing tennis bag or a missing luggage bag. But whatever way you look at it, it's seen around the wardrobe. Now, it just so happens that the cadaver dog hits on that area.
Yep.
It's weird. It's very odd that a bag goes missing and that it's in the area where the cadaver dog hits. That's what I'm saying. And so where the places where the cadaver dog hits are actually places where this bag could have been moved to. There are specific spots where there's not necessarily blood evidence or anything like that, but just the scent. So it could be, just like you described, where a dog can find contraband inside of a hidden compartment. You know, the dog can sense where a body being in a bag could have been placed a couple of places before being completely removed.
Mm-hmm.
That's a theory. This is us trying to make sense of this, because we don't have a smoking gun here. There isn't something that is as definitive as is in, you know, some of these other cases you mentioned, like the Rotier case. So this is a bit tricky, and it may
be
because
we
don't have a body. And I think one of the keys with this case, the reason why it's not solved now, is not only did they start off on the wrong foot, but I believe that if the parents are involved, because we can guess all we want, if they are involved, they probably had a lot more time to work on this situation than other people have had when they've been in similar situation, either through maliciousness or accident. So in order to stage a scene or anything like that, I believe they had more time. But that's, again, that's just a guess.
And is Scotland Yard still helping, or the UK law enforcement?
They have quite a number of detectives in Portugal working. I believe there's 37 of them with Operation Grange. They have no answer still. And that's actually something that's being debated right now about whether to pull them back or not, because of the seeming lack of progress on this case. And they're dealing with terrorist threats and other things in England that they feel might be needing more attention at this point in time.
Yeah, more prioritizing.
So despite all of the attention, despite all of the investigation, this is still unsolved because there is no smoking gun.
So what happened to the town after this?
It's said that the town suffered some, as it relates to tourism, because of this case, this young girl disappearing, people started getting nervous. I think this wouldn't have had the impact it did had they made an arrest early on, because that's the town reacting and fixing the situation. And I'm not saying they had to, but since they didn't, and there's this question of what did happen, I think people are much more reticent to go out there, or at least they were at the time. And the Ocean Club actually ended up letting go quite a few people. In fact, one of the people they let go was the very woman that turned down the room the day before the disappearance.
And they didn't need to do that.
Yeah, according to the people who were let go, some of them, and you can find videos of them speaking online on YouTube, but they were saying that they thought that they took advantage of the situation. This is what I gathered, but they can increase their profits by having fewer employees. So they just basically said, sorry, tourism's down because of the negative publicity that these holiday apartments have received, the Ocean Club. So we're going to have to let some of you go. So when you suddenly let a couple dozen people go and say, sorry, we can't keep you on anymore, those people, they didn't seem to agree with the reasoning given by their employers.
And if there was somebody that was there getting paid a lot of money, they could let them go and then hire a new person and pay them less. Lots of different things that they do.
Yeah, it's really unclear. I'm not sure what happened with that. There's one other thing I wanted to say. We've not exactly said, oh, they have to go and arrest the parents, but we have been saying that her parents seem like the most likely suspects. In other words, we feel like they just too little too late when it comes to them and the Portuguese police. Kate McCann was given a number of questions to answer, and she refused to answer all of them except for one. And some of these questions are as follows. What happened after you raised the alarm in the tapas? Why did you go and warn your friends instead of shouting from the veranda? Who contacted the authorities? Who took place in the searches? Did anyone outside the group learn of Madeline's disappearance in those following minutes? What does "we let her down" mean? Did Jane tell you that night that she'd seen a man with a child? And there are other questions that kind of ask about if she contacted the media. These are important because she had the ability to call the police immediately, and she chose not to. She
those
got
sound
with her
very general.
Well, no, but I think they are following a line of questioning here, which is interesting because this is indicative that there is suspicion here. Why did it take so long for the authorities to be contacted instead of just rushing around? And meanwhile, she has her little ones in the room still.
I just think she could have been more forthcoming with her answers to some of the more general questions.
She didn't want to answer any of them. As we go through this, these questions, some more of these. When the sniffer dog marked the scent of corpse coming from the vehicle you hired a month after the disappearance, did you say you couldn't explain any more than you already had? When human blood was marked in the boot of the vehicle, did you say you couldn't explain any more than you already had? And they kind of go through and ask her, these are things that tie you to the case, and you have no comment then, and you don't have comment now. And it's this idea that this is your child. What's more important here? Do you want to help us? And this is where the question is that she finally does answer. They ask her, are you aware that in not answering the questions, you are jeopardizing the investigation, which seeks to discover what happened to your daughter? And her answer, which is the only one she gives, is yes, if that's what the investigation thinks. Mm-hmm. As far as the parents go, do you suspect that they'll ever be brought back in or charged ever? Or do you think they just continue on?
I think they continue on. I don't think they're ever going to find the child.
So you suspect that they would need to find her remains somehow before they would move on the parents?
Yeah. They just need something, anything, one more shred of evidence.
I get the sense that they're close to having something to work with, but that's the thing, is you have to have that one more piece of evidence to kind of nail everything down. Because as it is, they have very suggestive evidence, but they don't have that key evidence. They would need to just call them up and haul them in.
One of their friends might need to speak up.
Unfortunately, I think one of them would have broken by now if they were going to.
Yeah.
If they know something, they would have spoken by now if they were going to. It's been enough time.
So you can either believe that somebody came into their their room and stole their kid. And they just happened to be in the same room that somebody else was killed in or murdered or a dead body was laying around in. Or you can look at the parents as the prime suspect.
And we should say, at least from my point of view, if you don't agree with what we're suggesting could be the case, then you're not necessarily wrong because, again, there is no smoking gun. So I can't, like, bring something out and place it in front of you and say, here's this one thing. Now, I do know from the feedback we've had from the listeners that the cadaver dog situation was their breaking point, where the case actually broke for them, where they said, aha. And I get that. You know, you can look at these dogs and say, well, they're just trained to do these specific things. And they were introduced to all kinds of areas. They weren't just taken to the McCann stuff. They were taken all over the place. And it's only when they get near certain spots, the wardrobe and near the bed, the window, and in the back of this Renault, that's when the dog alerts. So for me, I would say that's enough to really focus on the parents. It's not saying that they're 100% guilty of something. It just means you can talk suspects all day long. You can talk about, you know, a pedophile ring or Robert Murat or anybody else you want. But the one unique situation that's popped up in this entire case is that the dogs hit upon stuff having to do with the McCanns and not anyone else.
Exactly.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.